So last night's leaders of the main political parties and, of course, Geoffrey Donaldson for the DUP, they faced off for the last debate before voters here go to the polls tomorrow. Did it help you decide who to vote for? Did it change your mind at all? And again, who do you think came out on top? Commentators Amanda Ferguson and Alex Kane are with us. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
030 30 80 55 55, that number, you know it, I'm sure. Pick up the phone and get in touch with us. Amanda, we'll start with you. Any surprises last night?
No major surprises. The part that I enjoyed was in the last question, whenever they were talking about green issues, because I think that the five main parties have struggled with that. They were all very keen to talk about recycling whenever people were asked, when the audience member had asked about climate change. So you can see a sort of little bit almost of embarrassment amongst them, because I think they recognise that they're playing catch up on this issue with the, you know, perhaps the Greens and other parties who make the environment you know, their priority. But I think most of them give a good account of themselves. I don't think there was any sort of clear winners, but I did think that Geoffrey Donaldson sort of would struggle to convince people that his party was going to represent everybody's interests, because the other leaders, well, I suppose he's not the leader, but Arlene Foster wasn't there. The other party leaders were able to come back. You know, Naomi Long hit him again with a good point about, you know, the DUP is able to change its mind about Brexit, so why can't the people? So I'm not sure that there was any major vote-winning lines, but, you know, this is Northern Ireland, so most people knew who they were going to vote for when the election was called.
Alex Kane, in relation to the fact that Arlene was not there last night, did that surprise you? She didn't take part in the UTV debate either.
No, it didn't really surprise me, because...
Why do you think that is?
Well, I'm not 100% sure. Maybe she just doesn't like that atmosphere of doing it. I mean, she did talk back with William Crawley at lunchtime yesterday, did an hour there, took a few hits on things. I don't know. It's just one of those things, and I don't know what the rules are. I always used to think years ago that the rules were it was the leaders, unless for some very specific reason that they were sick or something like that. But that now seems to be flexible, because technically Michelle isn't the leader of Sinn Féin, and we saw this on Sunday, the UTV debate as well. That it wasn't Arlene. But in terms of, you know, of the bigger picture, whether Geoffrey acquitted himself, well, I think Amanda's right. I think I've known Geoffrey for 35, 40 years. We were in the Ulster Unionist Party together. He wasn't the usual old confident Geoffrey, but I think it's because he's been a safe pair of hands. He took the knocks. Took quite a few knocks from all the parties.
I did notice online some people saying that Sir Geoffrey was quieter than usual until towards the end of the programme when he came alive.
Well, I think that's the thing. I think he had been put on to be safe, because that's what he does. He is one of the safest pair of hands. That's a role he used to occupy in the Ulster Unionist Party as well. But as I say, I think his brief was basically no hostages of fortune, no damage done. It's not in cases like this, Denise. It's not sometimes... The important thing is not to land a blow.
Yeah, well, many will say that while perhaps they approached that thinking they're on the back foot to an extent. Sir Geoffrey, as expected by many, had to bat away a lot of finger-pointing regarding the DUP links with the Tories, of course, and blame, as some say it, for where we currently are. Did he defend the party well, Alex?
No, not really, because I don't know what there was to defend. I think what was most interesting about it was that all the hits coming on Geoffrey were coming from Steve Aiken, and all the hits coming on Michelle O'Neill were coming from the SDLP. I think it was interesting that between the Sinn Féin and the DUP, apart from one moment when O'Neill told Geoffrey, don't shout at me or something like that, they were actually remarkably calm, remarkably civilised. So in one sense, this looked not simply a leader's debate, it also looked like a battle between the smaller voice of nationalism and the smaller voice of unionism to actually say, look, we're still here, don't discount us. And that may have been reflected in, you know, in some of the online reaction afterwards of people. Some people said, both of them, Colm and Steve, performed a little better than they expected them to be. But in terms of O'Neill and Donaldson, no, it's the key thing here, Vinny, no serious damage done to them. And it's not, I suspect, you know, you asked right at the beginning, you know, do many people, you know, will this have changed minds? All the evidence suggests that the vast majority of people who watch these leadership debates tend to be people, 90% of them have already made up their minds.
But we do know, though, I get that point, Alex, and you maybe do have a point there, but Amanda, there are a very small number of votes separating a couple of parties in some of the constituencies. So surely with that in mind, anything that could sway people, for example, a TV debate that attracts thousands of people still has a lot of relevance.
Well, I think it does for people who are maybe undecided on what they're going to do. But, you know, the majority of people here come into this knowing, you know, who the supporter or knowing after the pact or non-pact are put out what way they're going to swing. But it was interesting to me that Geoffrey Donaldson appeared to be sort of the DUP was almost taking credit for the election happening at all, which is a really risky game because it depends what happens with the vote in Britain as to what way it goes. Michelle O'Neill and Geoffrey Donaldson were under the most pressure because they're the big two, and the other parties will want to go after them for that reason.
Well, a lot of the parties were attacking Sir Geoffrey in terms of weakening the union, and they were throwing by some Brexit mess. They were saying this is the DUP's fault. You were in bed with the Tories, and now you are to blame.
Yeah, well, Steve Aiken was, holding his copy of the newsletter and focusing on the border down the Irish Sea and the reference to Arlene Foster's Jonathan Tittle interview with John Manley in the Irish News or RHI. And he seemed to take a more, he seemed to be laughing at his opponents this time rather than in the UTP debate where he was a little more sort of aggressive and forceful. But then, you know, Naomi Long was able to come back and have a dig at the Ulster Unionists about inconsistency. I thought that of all the people that were talking, that Naomi Long seemed very firm and sensible, and she didn't appear to be too rattled other than whenever she didn't think that she was getting enough time to have her view. And I think that Colin Eastwood has maintained a level of sort of sassiness that the SDLP have brought a new sort of energy to this campaign, and it strikes me that the kind of energy that the SDLP activists and that the representatives that are talking on air have brought to this election, they need to maintain that if they want to, you know, seriously compete with Sinn Féin again in other elections.
Sinn Féin's Michelle O'Neill and the SDLP's Colm Eastwood, they clashed over the Sinn Féin policy. We've talked about this many times on the programme of not taking its seats at Westminster, which is no surprise really. But some people were saying then, Alex Kane, that Michelle maybe overstated the idea that a small number of MPs can't make much of a difference in Westminster.
Well, she did overstate it because a small number of MPs can make a difference. You need to go back to the 1970s at the time where Harold Wilson or Cal, I can't remember which, had a majority of about three. And one or two votes, including Jerry Fitch at one point, made a huge difference at that point. And if we're coming back, I mean, it is possible that the polls are all over the place. We could come back to a situation where every vote will count, that Corbyn could maybe be in a position to create some sort of coalition with the Scottish Nationalists, the Lib Dems, and a few other independents. So yes, it is, in those sort of circumstances, one or two MPs, particularly, you know, if Sinn Féin aren't taking the seat, they can make a huge difference. And I think Colin, I know they're caught in this very difficult position, you know, you're attacking abstentionists for being abstentionists, and the next way you haven't admitted that you've done a deal to try and get an abstentionist into North Belfast. It's a slightly different argument there, but yeah, it's wrong. O'Neill is wrong. Anyone who says that individuals cannot make a difference in very tight situations, very specific situations, they can make a whopping difference. And I think Steve Aiken said yesterday, there were moments in the past 2 years when Sinn Féin's seven MPs, had they been there, would have made a crucial difference to some votes.
Okay, 030-3080-55-55. It is on the iPlayer if you want to watch this, if you missed it. But let's play a few clips to give us a flavour of what happened last night on the programme. There were clashes between the two unionist parties over the DUP's position on Brexit and on Boris Johnson.
My message to unionists is to send a strong unionist team back.
Well, don't send you back, Geoffrey. You put a border down the Irish Sea on the 2nd of October.
Because that's actually what unionists want. That's what I'm hearing on the doorstep. And Steve keeps going on about the 2nd of October. Steve needs to get his facts right. Steve, if you want to be a member of Parliament,
let's
do this. Come on. Let's show both sides of what we're doing. Come on.
There it is. There's Boris Johnson's deal, and the date on the deal is not the 2nd of October, Steve. It's the 17th of October. And 2 days later, in the House of Commons, the DUP blocked that deal because it's not a good deal for Northern Ireland.
Very, very clearly, Arlene Foster, on the 2nd of October, said there was a strong and sensible deal. The only difference between the deal that you agreed on the 2nd of October...
It wasn't a deal on the 2nd of October,
the only
Steve.
Deal... Well, why did Arlene Foster and you lot all turn round and say, it was a strong and sensible idea? The only difference between that and Boris Johnson's deal was around the issue of consent.
No, that's not true.
Did you actually check?
That's not true.
And of course, the two nationalist parties, they clashed over Sinn Féin's refusal, as we've talked about already this morning, to sit at Westminster.
One or two Irish MPs will never make a difference. Your party was in Westminster for many years. They weren't able to stop austerity. They weren't able to stop the tax on public services. They weren't able to stop welfare reform. And they were not able to attack austerity on public services.
You voted to give the Tories the power over welfare reform. So don't be lecturing anybody about welfare reform.
So Colm. Again, you're being disingenuous with the public.
You're pretending
that you can go to Westminster, that you can stop Brexit. That is absolute nonsense.
What I'm saying is part of a broad coalition of MPs who want to stop Brexit. Of course, you don't want to stop Brexit because you're happy with the deal.
Do you know what you'd be better doing? Working with me, working with the other pro-Remain parties to try and prevent a hard border on the island of Ireland, because our interests will never, ever be served in Westminster.
I have done that, but I also go and take my seat, if elected, to try to stop Brexit. Because that's what people want, and to try to stop austerity being imposed on people here, that has been happening for far too long. You want to stand outside looking in the window.
And the future of Stormont also prompted some angry exchanges.
Do I want to see direct rule? No, I don't, because I think it is a failure of devolution. I want to see devolution restored. I want to see local ministers take those decisions, because I believe that local politicians are the best people to take those decisions. But we're very clear in our manifesto, and we've been very clear now for some time, that if we cannot get devolution up and running again by the 13th of January, then there is no alternative. We can't continue to tread water like this indefinitely. We can't continue to have MLAs drawing a salary when they're not actually legislating.
Correct.
So we are going to have to accept that the 13th is a hard deadline. It's then over to the Secretary of State.
0-30-30-80-55-55. Let's go to John in Lisburn first. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Vinny.
What do you reckon? Did you watch it last night, and was there a clear winner for you?
Well, I was actually in the audience last night, and I did get the opportunity briefly to make a response or statement or question. And I just wanted, I thought maybe if Alex and Amanda are still there, they might like to sort of pursue it, if that's okay.
What's the point you want to make, John?
The point I want to make is I suggested that perhaps, since one of the stumbling blocks seems to still be the Irish Language Act, could that not, in a restored assembly, be introduced as a private member's bill or introduced as a party bill, go through all the process, amendment, committee stage, etc., and passed, but without the DUP, or at least with the DUP, putting aside parking, whatever you want to call it, the petition of concern. And I would have thought the numbers were there for a fairly broad Irish language.
Okay.
I can't understand why Sinn Féin are so resistant to that, or the DUP would be resistant to not using conditional concern.
Let's get Amanda's response to that. Amanda Ferguson.
Yeah, I think that was a point that Colin Eastwood made, that, you know, if the petition of concern was maybe suspended for that, it could just be rattled through by the rest of the parties, because I think that there's a false narrative around the Irish Language Act that it's only a Sinn Féin demand. Like, you've seen online the photographs of all the different parties lining up, you know, the Alliance Party, SDLP, People Before Profit, the Greens, all support rights for Irish language speakers. And I think that Michelle, whenever she was sort of hit with that question, it was kind of, you know, choose between good public services and a rights-based issue, and she refused to do that, which I think was the right thing to do.
Alex Hayne?
Yes, I was going to say, yes, John is absolutely right. I mean, there are a number of processes, and a private member's bill would be one of them, by which a very contentious act like that can be brought through, you know, and it can be done. But it needs willingness on both sides, and I'm not sure that... I just don't get the feeling, partly from the body language yesterday, but also from other things I've seen over the past few weeks, I don't get the feeling that the DUP would be willing to suspend the petition of concern on that issue. That said, Vinny, it is possible that the Sinn Féin, the DUP, could sit down, because I think John is right, and I think Amanda would agree with this as well. The numbers are there for an Irish language act in some form to get through. But the DUP would say, OK, if you're going to suspend it, if we're willing to suspend it to get that through, are you willing to suspend it on a key issue for us which really matters to us? That would also have to come into the debate. And I don't know whether they're close enough or willing enough or cooperative enough to do either of those things.
We've talked already this morning about swaying votes and maybe those floating voters, how they can maybe change their mind. Can many of us move from that orange and green, that tribal voting pattern that quite a few fall into? And I'm intrigued. I wonder if there is someone this morning that thinks, do you know what? I had a particular perspective. I had a vote, a candidate in mind, a party in mind before I watched that programme. After I watched it, it changed my mind. And now I'm going to change how I vote. 030-30-80-55-55. Liam next. Good morning, Liam.
How are you doing, Sonny?
Not too bad. Go ahead.
Sonny, I thought Michael Bean last night was absolutely excellent, the way she held herself and how she put herself across. And in particular, you know, the usual attacks of Colin Reid regarding Westminster. And
Liam, can I ask, are you on a hands-free, Liam? The signal's
no,
not great.
No, I'm not sounding any better.
It's not. Liam, what we'll do is work on it. We'll try and come back to you. Just stay there and Gareth will speak to you, Liam. William in Belfast next. William, go ahead.
Good morning, Vinny. Vinny, to me, that reminds me last night of five bald people arguing over comb. Now, I'll tell you why. It's near enough certain that Boris will have a majority. So the 11 or 12 that go back here will be totally irrelevant. But what should be relevant to us at thinking? I feel sure the Sinn Féin are being blackmailed into going back to Stormont to get their border poll.
You don't know how the vote will turn out. Like Theresa May, in the last general election,
you can down to the bookies and try and have a bet on a hung parliament, you'll get a good price.
But Theresa May thought that she would come back with a majority before as well.
I'm dealing with reality. The 11 that go back will be irrelevant this time, not like the last time. But you and the BBC should focus your mind on that Stormont will be back and there will be a border poll, and that will be the price the British government pay for Sinn Féin to get in there.
That's your prediction.
There's no way you'll get a border poll without Stormont back, and you'll see that happening in the new year.
There are some people from that programme last night, Alex Kane, saying that when it came to the likes of Colm Eastwood, he's better when he's positive. He comes across better when he's positive and not when he's arguing, for example, with Michelle O'Neill.
Well, I think there tends to be views that that's what most politicians are when you watch them. William Mippy reflected that. There were times it did sound like just five people, you know, fighting over an issue which they would never resolve. People like to see their leader positive. It's just one of those things because it's a yes, you do. But they also like to see a certain amount of sassiness. And there were a couple of moments where Eastwood did land blows on O'Neill and did get a round of applause. But what I think we saw both in the last couple of debates with Colm, this is a guy who's realised an SDLP leader, and this is important for me psychologically. This is an SDLP leader who's standing on the cusp of, I think, certainly one seat being won back for the party and the possibility of two. And that, when you're in that sort of mood, you want to play both to your safe grassroots core, but you also want to see if you can bring, particularly for Foyle, where he's only, I think, 700-800 votes behind Sinn Féin, he wants to bring over just a few maybe wavering Sinn Féiners, a few wavering unionists, a few wavering alliance there who think, actually, I might, you said about would anybody change their minds. It's in cases like that, actually, that sometimes they change their mind. I think I do prefer him to the other one.
Just something that's come into my head, Alex Kane, we were talking to Sinn Féin yesterday with their manifesto and the suggestion that, power sharing could be up and running again before Christmas, which is literally days away almost. Are you hearing any rumblings that there might be something happening, some change on the horizon?
All I will say, yes, I have heard rumblings, and I'll say this, you and I and Stephen and I have had this conversation since January 2017. I hear these rumblings, and before every set of talks, I hear a Secretary of State saying, there are only a few things dividing us. I hear all the party leaders saying, we're willing, it's important. I heard them last night, yes, we have to sit down, we have to give it a go. And so you're asking the next stage of that question, then, is how likely do I think it is that by the 13th...
Well, we don't call you the prophet of doom for nothing, but your prediction, Alex Kane...
My prediction is that there will be talks. My prediction is, further prediction is that I cannot at this stage.
Okay.
I'm not going to rule out anything, but I cannot see them leading to an assembly in 3 or 4 weeks.
Okay.
Time,
no. Liam's back, Liam. Hopefully your line's a bit better. Go ahead, please, Liam. Make your point again.
Yeah, how's that now?
That's not too bad. You just stay near the window.
No, but I was just saying, I thought Michelle O'Neill was excellent last night, in particular when she argued the point that, only heavy hitting around Brexit was done in Brussels, Strasbourg, America and Dublin, not taking their seats in Westminster, and that's how they were elected on an abstentionist policy, hasn't done Sinn Féin any harm at all. Eastwood will try and argue that going to Westminster would have made a difference. It wouldn't. Being in Strasbourg and being in Brussels made the difference. And Colin Eastwood at one time.
Look what happened in the last election with the DUP, and they were the kingmakers in the end. And they had they became hugely relevant, and they had 10 MPs.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, at the end of the day, were they really relevant? Because Boris Johnson threw them under the bus, not once, but a few times. You know, and if you go back to Colin Weasel, he accuses Michelle of being disingenuous. Colin, if he's elected to Westminster, the very first thing he will do will be to tell a lie. And I'll tell you, I'll explain what I'm saying.
I think actually it was Michelle O'Neill that said that the SDLP were disingenuous to suggest that it could stop Brexit. That's actually what was said.
Yeah, but Colin, if he goes to Westminster and swears allegiance to the Queen, he's not actually telling the truth because he doesn't believe in it. So the very first thing he will do will be to tell a lie. Because if you don't believe in something
There's no suggestion that Colm is lying about anything. Liam, thank you. Amanda Ferguson, there were also some saying that Naomi Long, in terms of how she came across in the programme, she stood back quite a bit, let the others discuss, debate, argue a little bit, and she was quite quiet.
Yeah, well, I know that these programmes are very finely balanced in terms of how long each person speaks for, but the Alliance Party's in the unique position where it gets to attack everybody because people from all different backgrounds vote for it. But I think that when Colin was talking, he was more... he sort of hit better blows whenever he was talking about things like university places, whenever he was striking a chord with issues that matter to people in the area where he is standing. And I think that Michelle O'Neill perhaps should have steered away from talking so much about the difference that votes make and focus on the side of things and the fact that Sinn Féin aren't into Westminster. And I think what your caller's saying about Colm, you know, Colm Eastwood doesn't have allegiance to the Queen, but he's prepared to make that oath to take his seat. Sinn Féin aren't prepared to do that. And at the last election, we saw that the Nationalist community didn't sufficiently care enough about representation at Westminster to return SDLP MPs. This time round, it's a different proposition, I think, because the voting public realise that it's a unique election and all of the different packs that are coming into play. It's been fascinating talking to people on the ground, particularly somewhere like Belfast North. You know, I've spoken to people who are Alliance, SDLP and Green voters who are going to be voting for Sinn Féin on polling day, but not so much because, you know, they're particularly impressed with John Finucane, but more because they're upset with how
the SDLP have stood aside for. Alex Kane, you said that Sir Geoffrey was perceived maybe to be a safe pair of hands for the DUP in that debate, whereas some were criticising Steve Aiken, the UUP leader, saying that he just spent most of his time interrupting other people.
Well, I think Steve's problem is, well, it's not a problem, the reality is, he has to try and get some in. He's a new leader. He has to sound a bit bouncier, has to sound a bit more serious. He has to score a few hits. And in fairness to him, I think he did get that the moment when he pulled out a newspaper and so on, you could see from Geoffrey's face, Geoffrey was seriously discomforted by that. But I think he came back. Steve's problem is Geoffrey probably, the DUP is reasonably confident it'll come back with a minimum of 8 and will probably come back with 10. The LCUnist, looking at the figures, there's Colm, it's a possibility, but not much, and Danny Kinahan, Southampton. So I think for Steve, it's a matter of just making sure, if they don't get seats, that the votes goes up. Because people keep saying, what's the relevance, what's the importance, what's the role of the LCUnist Party? And I think sometimes in the past couple of weeks, Aiken has been quite bold, he has been quite radical. He said things like, you know, you have betrayed the union, you have put the union in danger, you have done all of this damage, but whether that can, that genuine, and there is, I've heard that criticism reflected across aspects of unionism, but the problem is, Vinny, unless that Steve's anger and Steve's blows against Geoffrey are translated into a lot of extra votes tomorrow or even a seat, we will forget this debate. And you know, once the results are in, everything that happened before the election is forgotten about.
Okay. All right, Jenny in Belfast next. Good morning, Jenny.
Oh, hi. I'd like to really disagree with that man that's saying about it doesn't matter if people take a seat in Westminster. The fact of the matter is we have a Westminster, whether Sinn Féin recognise it or not. They supply our budget. They give us all the money for all the welfare, for all the strikers and the stuff that you've been talking about all week. And whoever is elected doesn't have a voice, as far as I'm concerned, unless it gets to Westminster. And,
I get the point you're making, Jenny, but others will say, well, they had that the 10 seats, those 10 MPs, and in the end, they didn't get what they wanted.
Yeah, well, I think they let us down a bit, didn't they? You know, they kept toing and froing and changing their mind. But, you know, going back to, you know, if people are voting for Sinn Féin or the DUP and or they're not going to vote at all, whoever you vote for, you want them to represent you. You want them to get this place up and running again.
Yeah, but Sinn Féin, for example, but Sinn Féin have not, you know, they've been an abstentionist party for years. So people that vote for Sinn Féin, they know that they will not take their seats in Westminster. So they are using their vote with that in mind, Jenny.
I know, but when I've been listening to your show all week, Vinny,
yeah,
the people in West Belfast and the people that have been voting for them feel very let down by them. And I think Sinn Féin, you know, nobody's saying it's going to be like that forever, but whether they recognise Westminster or not, it's a fact. They're there, and that's where the money comes from. And I really think they'd be better taking a new approach and getting there if they get a seat and go there and, you know, voice their opinion, because they're more likely to get stuff done. Get back to Stormont, get back to Westminster. Whoever you all vote for, just bear that in mind.
Okay, Jenny, thank you. Amanda Ferguson, as a political commentator, a general commentator, have you enjoyed this election so far?
I'll be honest, I thought that I was going to have a nice sort of coast into Christmas, and I had all my different...
I bet you did.
Appointments booked, so it's been a bit annoying in between trying to do all those sort of Christmas preparations, having to do this. I find the sort of new PAC discussions out with unionism interesting. It's been fun to sort of see how the parties have approached that. You know, the Green Party was very upfront. We're doing it for this reason. We're doing it for that reason. The SDLP was talking about unilateral decisions. So that's been a bit of crack listening to that. But, you know, we're dealing with 18 seats out of 650. Nobody knows what way it's going to go. You know, it's been difficult to make predictions because of these non-packed packs and because a lot of the seats are so close. But all I will definitely predict is that the Brexit chaos will continue in the new year, because whatever way the government is formed at Westminster, there's going to be people that aren't happy about it.
Let's go to the phones again. Sean in Enniskillen. Good morning, Sean.
Vinny, how are you?
Not too bad. Did you watch last night?
I did, yes.
And did it change your mind? Did it influence you on how you might vote?
No. But what was interesting was Naomi coming along with a little statement that has been vanted about by Jim Allister for years. And that was a coalition of the willing. Now, that is some move. That is some shift of position. Because at the end of the day, we've all been told this is not possible. This is not possible. Otherwise, you get one party ruling the roost. And I think that's a major, major concession.
Okay, Sean, thank you. Teresa next. Good morning, Teresa.
Hello, good morning, Vinny.
You sound very happy today, Teresa.
Where is the Nolan boy this morning?
The Nolan boy is gallivanting over in England. London or somewhere, I don't know. He's over there. He's out of my hair, so I'm happy enough. Are you missing him, Teresa? Is that it?
Well, I like an argument with him.
Do you? He doesn't like to argue. Nothing controversial for that man. Anyway, did you watch the programme last night?
Yes, I watched the programme last night, Vinny, and I suggest that all of our political leaders should equip themselves with a personal development course and learn the skills on how to debate without losing their cool. When you lose your cool, you lose the argument.
Who do you think lost their cool?
Quite a number of them.
And some people say, look, that's just a fiery debate, Teresa. They're passionate
about what they're there to represent. No, there are leadership skills that are required.
I'm surprised at you, Teresa, to be honest, because you're saying here you like a good row and you listen to this programme, but you don't like people shouting too much.
No, I don't like, raising your voice is not necessary.
Well, I don't know if you're listening to this programme too often, but Teresa, thank you. Alex, before we go, we have to always ask about predictions. I know you hate doing this in case you're wrong, but you said that. I did not say you're often wrong, but there we go. The proof will be in the pudding. What do you think?
In terms of Northern Ireland, I don't think there'll be very much change. I think there won't be very much change. I'm not expecting anything dramatic. In terms of the overall result, my hunch, and it is on my hunch, is that Johnson will squeeze it through with maybe 30, 35 plus. But looking at some of the polls today, listening to John Curtis, some of the experts on polling, they're still saying that until the polls close, it could go anywhere and anywhere. But I would surprised. Now, I'm not often genuinely surprised. I would be genuinely surprised, Vinny, if the Conservatives didn't come back with a thumping endorsement, but with probably a strong enough majority to get done what they need done, get it done, and then probably have another election in 2 years' time.
Amanda, there's something else I meant to bring in earlier, but I forgot, and that is the influence of social media now on voters, whether it be through ads online or through people campaigning, sharing news. It's not always reliable, of course. And that, some will say, makes a huge difference now when people are deciding who to vote for, especially younger voters.
Well, certainly, we know all the stories about, different governments trying to influence elections by using social media sites to do so. It's been fun for me as a freelance journalist on Facebook. I like a lot of different pages, just because of the nature of my work. I like all the different football teams, all the different political parties. So I've received some interest in sponsored ads during this campaign, and whenever you click into them, it gives you the reasons behind why they've tried to target you in the first place. I think it's never been more important for the public to understand about fact-checking and about reliable sources and where that they should be consuming their news. And I think that the more that we move into an online world and the less focus there is on mainstream media outlets, that's going to become even more crucial going forward. I don't think that the parties here have been doing too much with it. It's mainly just been sponsored ads and a lot of Facebook activity, but I'll certainly be looking forward to unclicking on those after the election to get back to Christmas.
And Alex Kane, not to call you a veteran, but I guess your history goes back quite far in relation to the UUP, etc. You've been there for quite a few elections. You used to be, you had the five channels on TV, you had whatever radio you listened to, and that was how you made your decisions. Now there are all these other influences there. Does it make the likes of TV debates, radio debates, less relevant? Does it diminish them in some way?
No, because I think the social media can do a number of things. But it's mostly visual. It's mostly, campaign ads and so on. Although, unlike Amanda, all my sponsored things seem to be about funeral plans and organisations, which I don't quite understand. I don't know what that says about the sort of things I follow on Twitter. But I think there's still something about watching performers, watching would-be prime ministers, would-be leaders, would-be whatever it is, actually having to engage each other in front of a live. And I always think it's the live that is the difference, because there's so much stuff that is now pre-recorded, swiped and wiped and so on. There's nothing better, Vinny. Actually, the other thing I missed, and this is how old I am, I miss the big town hall meetings. I miss the big hustings. Nowadays, hustings just tend to be organised by a charity. I love the old-fashioned hustings where candidates would go to a town hall and there might be 600 or 700 people there. That's real. That's real proper politics. It's tooth and nail politics now. It's almost too clean and measured and controlled for me at the minute.
Amanda Ferguson and Alex Kane, thank you very much. I should say, before you go, because you're both on this programme quite often, would you like a Nolan Show Christmas card?
Certainly, why not?
Well, don't sound too enthusiastic about it, Amanda, and Alex hasn't even answered.
I don't want Christmas cards, so...
You sent me one last year, and I didn't have to do anything, so I assumed that love for me is so strong that I'm already on your list.
We want you to vocalise your support for the programme. That's what we're doing, basically. We're bribing you with a Christmas card.
I would love a Christmas card.
Well,
my kids love Christmas cards, so yeah, there's for them.
Because he's off today, I like to annoy him, so I'm going to try... I really do like to annoy him. I don't know what that says about me. I would like to try and give away some of his merchandise. I don't get a budget for merchandise on my programme. He gets too much, basically, so there's none left over for me. So if you would like a Nolan Show Christmas card, and to really, really annoy him, I'm going to give away some of his mugs today. But what you have to do is get on air, 03030 80 55 55. Amanda and Alex, you're not getting a mug, you'll get a card, it's cheaper. But get on air, and you have to tell me why you don't miss him. So the reasons that you don't miss Stephen Nolan, 03030 80 55 55. Ring in, get on air, and we'll send you a Christmas card and a Nolan mug. I can't promise it'll be in one piece when it gets you, but there you go. Amanda Ferguson and Alex Kane, thank you very much.